taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning again, everyone.
Good morning.
So I've been thinking again about ordinary practice. In Zen, we say ordinary mind is the way. Got me thinking again about stories about extraordinary, ordinary individuals. So I want to tell you some stories today. These are about what sometimes people call tea grannies. Women who are women of brilliance and vigor and deep practice, and for the most part, they're anonymous. So they're shrewd and wise and fearless, and they challenge authority. They're simply a character in a story, unnamed character in a story, but they're the center of the story. They're not peripheral. So this anonymity is, of course, very common in tales about women, but it's also true for all of us, right? How many people are remembered for maybe a generation or two after they died? Most people in this world live and die without anyone beyond their immediate circle remembering them. So anonymity is, for most of us, a common experience, don't you think? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't often like to think that. We like to think, you know, we will be remembered, and we might be. You know, where I work, it's very moving, actually. This center is a Buddhist center, Buddhist graduate school. And every room has a name plaque of the people who donated to that, to help build this building. And pretty much without exception, they are all Japanese Americans who experienced internment in one way or the other. And yet out of their hardship, they gave to build this place, this center. And so they're remembered. But they're a name on a plaque. And there's a way in which when we contribute to our world, we're remembered, but often not by our names, right? So this sense of arising up in our lives and passing away, and the waters close over us, you know, and we're gone. And yet we can make a mark. So our culture is a culture of celebrity, don't you think? Of fame and gain. And Zen teachers, our ancestors, warn us again and again and again and again and again about being caught by fame and gain. So it doesn't mean that we don't aspire to something, but it does mean that we do it out of our deep intention, not out of a desire to be famous or to be known or even to be thanked. I think it was Stephen Levine who told a story about, you know, he thought he was pretty good about this, and then he was in India and he had an orange, and some child came up and grabbed the orange and ran away. And what he felt was, why didn't they thank me? Why didn't anybody thank me? So it gets increasingly subtle what we want. But if we stay close to our inmost request, we know that what we're doing is we're satisfying what is most deeply meaningful to us, what we really want our lives to be about. So we don't know much about how these women came to their deep understanding. their wisdom. We most often have little or no history about them. We don't know what their past. Some of them we know were students of famous Zen teachers, but there's a kind of mystery about how their skill and confidence and insight arose. We don't know the details. But I tend to think that they encountered the Dharma and were made alive by the Dharma, and it fed their intention, and they took it in and digested it in a very concrete way. Right? They didn't say, oh well, wisdom and deep insight are for the famous people or those people that go and spend their lives in a monastery. You know, we can do that. We can say, oh well, yeah, I want to do that, but I can't because I've got children or I have to work, or, you know, that's a way of copping out, actually, like saying, oh well, those people who shave their heads and go off to someplace, they're going to wake up. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. But actually, these women say, no, 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 no. No, you can't get away with that. You in the ordinary life you have can wake up. And one of the fun things about these stories is they actually test the monks. They test the professionals. And they upend the notions, their notions about the Dharma and practice and realization. So let me tell you a few stories, okay? Daishan Suinjian was a great scholar of the Diamond Sutra, but he was not a Chan or Zen practitioner. He was traveling south in search of the Dharma, carrying his commentaries of the Diamond Sutra with him. In the course of his travels, he came across an old woman on the roadside selling tea and rice cakes. He asked her, "Who are you?" And she responded, "I'm an old woman selling rice cakes." When he asked if he could buy some refreshments from her, she inquired, "Venerable priest, what are you carrying in your bag?" Uh-oh. Right, uh-oh. He said, "I am a scholar of the Diamond Sutra, and here I have all my notes and commentaries." How many of us lug around on our backs our, you know, what we think is worth something and trot it out? You know, this is like when the Buddha was sitting under the tree the night of his long sit, and Mara, the delusion, was throwing everything at him. And all he did was touch the earth and say, "Mara, I see you as Mara." He did not trot out his qualifications. "I know. I know why I'm here." And the earth shook to witness. So he says, "I am a scholar of the Diamond Sutra, and I have all my notes and commentaries." Hearing this, the old woman said, "I have heard that according to the Diamond Sutra, past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, and future mind is ungraspable. So where is the mind that you wish to refresh with rice cakes?" "Oh, scholar." "If you can answer this, you may buy a rice cake from me. If not, you'll have to go elsewhere for refreshment." So you can imagine, here's this dude, he's got all his books, he's walking along, he thinks that he's like just, you know, but something in him, maybe, when he says, "Who are you?" Right? You get this sense, something in him saw, And she just whacks him upside the head, right? Daishan was unable to reply. The old woman then directed him to a Chan master nearby. Daishan burned all his notes and commentaries the next day. So this encounter is about an encounter with an unexpected encounter with someone, something, some experience that we don't expect to convey the wisdom to us, right? "Who are you?" he says. And she's like, "With what mind do you
want to buy this rice cake.
You can't have it if you don't show yourself to me. And he's like stumped. But he follows her direction, right? He follows her direction. And he goes to this Chan master. And then he burns all his credentials. Now, that's not to say we burn the sutras, right? It doesn't mean that we don't study, that we don't. But we have to remember what it's about. And we have to pay attention to those people and experiences that tell us, with what mind? We could spend a long time on this one, but today I just want to kind of read you some stories. Magu, Nanquan, and another monk were on pilgrimage. Along the way, they met a woman who had a tea shop. Watch out for the tea shops, right? Caroline, when you serve tea, when we have the gratitude booth, right? Watch out. The woman prepared a pot of tea and brought three cups. She said to them, "Oh, monks, let those of you with miraculous powers drink tea." The three looked at each other. I mean, you can imagine, like, really? And the woman said, "Watch this decrepit old woman show you her own miraculous powers." Then she picked up the cups, poured the tea, and went out. Yeah? This is this... miraculous power, chopping wood, carrying water. We think that things need to be special, or there needs to be something shining, sparkling, flashy about our lives or practice or something. But that's an illusion. To drink tea, the fact that there is tea, is a miracle. Our lives are a miracle. When we know that, as this woman knows this, then gratitude is natural. I'm going to embarrass you, Diane, but there's an article in the Sentinel today about the climbing gym. Think about how miraculous it is that we can climb up walls. Now, granted, we have these little things to hang on to. But isn't that amazing that we can climb up walls and somebody's figured out how to help us climb up walls, that we can surf, that we can drink tea, that there's a candle, that we light it? And how many of you have lived without electricity? A lot of you have lived without electricity. You know what it's like after you've lived without electricity and you walk in and there's this little thing on the wall and you flip it and lights come on? Isn't that, I mean, it's amazing, really. It's a miracle. So this woman, this old woman, being intimate with her life, with her ordinary life, discovers miraculous powers. She doesn't go searching for it someplace special. She finds it in her tea shop. These women often also have strong, close, and mutually respectful relationships with teachers. It's the ignorant monks that are caught judging and striving and having trouble. So here's another story. This one's a little outrageous, okay? An old woman went to hear Master Hakuin, very famous Zen teacher, Hakuin, give a lecture, and he said, "Your mind is the Pure Land, and your body is Amida Buddha. Amida Buddha is not Shakyamuni Buddha, it's a different Buddha. When Amida Buddha appears, mountains, rivers, forests, and fields all radiate a great light. If you want to understand, look into your own heart. Okay? So Hakuin says, your mind is the Pure Land and your body is Amida Buddha. When Amida Buddha appears, mountains, rivers, forests, and fields all radiate a great light. Amida Buddha is the Buddha of infinite light. If you want to understand, look into your own heart. The old woman pondered Hakuin's words day and night, waking and sleeping. This is what's recommended when you take up a koan, right? Which is your life, this koan. One day, as she was washing a pot after breakfast, a great light flashed through her mind. She dropped the pot and ran to tell Hakuin. Amida Buddha filled my whole body. Mountain, rivers, forests, and fields are all shining with light. How wonderful! And she danced for joy. Hakuin said, what are you talking about? Does the light shine up your asshole? Small as she was, she gave him, Hakuin, a big push. I can see you're not enlightened yet, she said. And they both burst out laughing. So can you, this vitality, you know, and outrageousness and aliveness and willing to break the rules, willing to like say things, to challenge, to say, where is this? Is it? This is what these women in the tea shop are doing with the monks. You know, you think you've got something special there. You're carrying around your books with you. With what mind do you drink this tea? This is another one about Hakuin. Hakuin had many women disciples. He was a great, great teacher and wrote a wonderful... Anyway, there's many wonderful things about Hakuin. And sometime we'll study more about him. Master Hakuin Ekaku used to tell his students about an old woman who had a tea shop nearby, praising her understanding of Zen. The students didn't believe that such a person could have much wisdom. Now, how often do we do this? How often do we decide who has wisdom and who doesn't? Who can teach us and who can't? This is, you know, Dogen Zenji says, between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. In fact, I think sharp-witted can be a problem sometimes. You can get caught. The students didn't believe that such a person could have much wisdom, and so they would go to the tea shop to find out for themselves. This is where the, you know, the music comes in. Do, 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 do. It's kind of like, that's from, what was that? What's that movie about the shark?
Jaws,
yeah. Yeah, right. So if you were watching a movie right now, they would start playing that music like, whoa, the tea shop, watch out for the tea shop. Don't go in there. Whenever the woman saw them coming, she could tell all at once whether they had come for tea or to look for her grasp of Zen. In the former case, if they were looking for tea, she served them graciously. In the latter, she beckoned them to come behind the screen to the back of the tea shop. The instant they obeyed, she struck them with a fire poker. Nine out of 10 of them did not escape her beating. Right? So this is, you know, we laugh. And I mean, I love these stories because they, how are we laughing? We're laughing out of recognition. We're laughing out of gratitude, right? We're laughing because we want this. We might not want to get beat by a fire poker, but we want our life we want teachers in our lives, and there are many, that help us to get real, to stop searching, pretend searching, So these women are, in a very real sense, embodiments of what we call the person of no rank. One way of understanding this person of no rank is a person of no count, a person who's not counted. Have you ever felt like a person of no rank?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one time I think I was about 50 or so, and I was in this store in San Francisco that was kind of like a remainder kind of store, you know, kind of store where you go in. I was looking for a coat. It was cold, and I was looking for a coat, and so I went to this place, and there were like racks of coats, and then they have the mirrors on the posts in the store, so there's no place to try things on. And I was trying on this coat, and there was about, I don't know, maybe less than this much distance between me and the mirror, not that far. And I was looking at myself in the mirror, the coat, and this young woman came and stood right in front of me to look in the mirror. And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Oh, I didn't see you." And that was the first time I knew I was getting to be an old woman. I was invisible to her. That's a person of no rank. What do you do then? What do you do with that? You know, and how often do we see people in terms of their rank, in terms of where they fit into our scheme of worth? You know, how do we free ourselves from that? These women, the people in the story, are freed from that, freed from needing to be a person of rank. And they help us also be free, just like the scholar who burns his books, right? So, what have you done with those experiences? What do you do with those experiences? What do you do when you see you're ranking others in terms of worth? Or, that's another story, this is so funny. Oh my God. So, a part of my work is I help people who are training to be chaplains in a hospital. And sometimes I go and help them with their mid-year things. They get feedback. And so I went to this council of about four or five of us with this student. And this guy came in, and he immediately started asking me questions. Where did I train? Was I ordained? Did I have a PhD? All this stuff. And it was like a graph. I could see my worth going up or down depending on whether I was ordained. Yes, I had a PhD. Where did I get my PhD? Well, I didn't get it at Berkeley. And then, oh, I was a professor. Oh, okay, then I'm back up here. And it was like, oh, that's it. You know? So we can draw this graph, right? Of who's worthy? What car do they drive? Or make all kinds of assumptions. Don't we do this? So one of the inspiring things about these women is that they're not fooled by any of that stuff. They are a person of no rank, and rank does not interfere with the way they engage with other humans and probably other beings of other kinds as well. So they are outside of rank, in a way. They live outside of rank. They've stepped outside of all the structures of value that we come up with. They're freed from convention. It doesn't mean that they don't understand convention or they can't work with it, nor does it mean they disrespect others. In fact, when you see the interactions between these women and Hakuin, who was a very revered Zen teacher, you can see they have great respect, so much respect for him that they're willing to engage him outside of the convention. They're willing to challenge him, to be intimate with him. They are grounded in a sense of themselves that is not constructed by all of our nonsense. We say the true person of no rank is coming in and going out of your sense gates. Who is that person of no rank? So the person of no rank is a person of wisdom, a person of the Dharma, freely giving and receiving, engaged with reality each moment. So these tea women know this from the inside, and they express their knowledge freely with humor. Right? Humor is important. It's interesting, isn't it? When we laugh with recognition, you know? Why do we laugh with recognition? Because something stirs us. So they poke at pretensions. They are of the world. They function as an inspiration to us, right? I have one more thing I want to read to you. This is another one with Master Hakuin. When Zen Master Hakuin was invited to the town of Shinano, an enlightened laywoman by the name of Asan, Old San, so we have a name, went to see him. Hakuin greeted her by silently holding up one hand. Asan immediately responded, even better than hearing Hakuin's sound of one hand. This is a famous koan. It's often given. What is the sound of one hand? Sometimes it gets changed into what is the sound of one hand clapping, but it's what is the sound of one hand. Even better than hearing Hakuin's sound of one hand, let's clap both hands and do some real business. Hakuin replied, if you can do business by clapping both hands, then there is no need to hear the sound of one. He picked up paper and brush and painted a bamboo broom. He passed it to Asan, and she wrote, this broom sweeps away all the imposters in Japan. First of all, Hakuin of Hara. So we want to cultivate our inner programming, so to speak. They can inspire us. Inspire us in our ordinary lives. In our, you know, we each have one that's trying to get through to us over and over and over again, demanding us to turn our lives into a place of practice, no matter what our lives are like. They kind of haul us back, right? Haul us back. Say, what is real practice? What is real practice? And it's not anybody else's responsibility, but each of us in the lives we have, as I keep saying over and over again. So we see our lives as practice, and we engage in humor and generosity, and we listen deeply, and we use our ordinary lives as our tea huts, as our tea. We serve tea, right, with our, in everything we do. So I hope you will be inspired by these tea grannies. Okay?